Good night, America. It's time for your news by the numbers, and tonight's number is 12. Yes, indeed, America, it is true. This comes from a recent study from the Center for American Progress. It says less than 12 states mention the term healthy relationships and sexual assault or consent in their sexual education program. But with the Me Too movement moving at a record-breaking pace on changing culture and changing our society, that might change. Since the beginning of 2018, 5 states have introduced bills to require teaching of consent in sex ed, and the think tank is confident that more will follow. With the Brett Kavanaugh conundrum coming to a close, this Me Too movement seems to be at the forefront of the country. And listen, I've said this all along, people, pull my tapes, as they would say in the business. If we don't talk about how we educate our young men and boys, this problem will continue to happen for the foreseeable future. It goes far beyond moms telling their young boys to be respectful. And it goes far beyond dads sitting down having a conversation about the birds and the bees. We've got to change culture. And changing culture requires a couple of things. One, it requires that we have new rules and everybody knows the new rules. And two, it requires that we make these new rules and this ideal of healthy sexual relationships and consent seep into the bloodstream of every man, of every boy, of every woman, and of every girl all across this country. And for that to happen, not only does it have to happen in the household, but it has to happen in schools all across the country. Beyond that, folks, we also live in a country where we don't even teach comprehensive sexual education in all 50 states. There are some states, including the state of Mississippi, where the only thing that is taught is abstinence only. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, Mississippi has the highest teen pregnancy rate in the United States of America. So we've got a lot of work to do here. But as far when it comes to healthy sexual relationships and like the kids call it being sex positive, it requires more than just a conversation from your mom or a conversation from your dad. This has to be a recurring, echoing theme from when we begin to have the conversation of sexual intercourse with our students until they stop becoming students. Before they turn 18, about 8% of girls and 0.7% of boys experience rape or attempted rape, according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. A majority of these reported cases, the CDC says, the perpetrator is a peer, either an acquaintance or a current or former intimate partner. Analysts at the Center for American Progress found even more gory details about this. They're considering state laws in 24 states and Washington that require sexual education in public schools and found that not all states address the topic in their sexual education standards. Now, here are the states that do it correctly. Rhode Island, West Virginia, Washington, D.C. mandate detailed state standards at addressing aspects of sexual health and clearly categorized topic areas by age, according to the analysis. Hawaii, Maine, Maryland, North Carolina, Vermont don't spell out these requirements, but they have revamped their state standards to address consent and healthy relationships. And when the Center for American Progress reviewed California, New Jersey, and Oregon, they found that they have a comprehensive sexual education standard requiring teachers to discuss healthy sexual relationships as part of education. And it should not be just in one state or another. This should be across the board. States that you see missing from this list, right? The state of New York, right? The state of Illinois, the state of Florida, the state of Texas, huge parts of the United States federal government, huge parts of the United States population are not having these conversations. And we're sitting here, America, and we're wondering why. We're wondering why we continue to see more and more of these type of cases. We're sitting here wondering why President Trump and his allies can go out and say things like, you know, I feel really sorry for the boys. The boys don't know what to do. This is a war on men. Maybe this is the year of the man. My response to all of that is a pretty simple one. Maybe we should start teaching our men and boys, educating them about what a healthy sexual relationship looks like. And let me be very clear, not just in the home, but if we're teaching sex in public schools, which we should, and we should be teaching comprehensive sexual education in public schools, if we are doing that already, then it shouldn't be hard to add in what is a healthy sexual relationship and what is not a healthy sexual relationship. And I'd be remiss before I go if I didn't talk about how our young people are consuming sex in our current society. Have you ever taken a look at some of the pornography that's out there that these young people are watching? BDSM, people choking folks out. If this is what they're watching on the screens, this is what they're gonna mimic in their sexual relationships, unless we define what healthy sexual relationships really are. We'll be right back after this break. Don't go anywhere.
Fight to win, stand up straight, no debate, pushed by hate, concentrate, penetrate, generate, motivate, live by faith, keep believing. I know the reason, it's the season, now's the time, keep on dreaming, keep on leading, and keep on fighting. I am fighting for the liberation of voices with something to say. Like many before me, for glory, you'll have to stand in harm's way. I'm no savior, just a soldier with an order. So I have no choice but to trust.
Good night, America. It's time for the Richard Fowler Show. As always, we have your favorite segments. Reality Check, The Wash and Whisperer, Can We All Just Get Along? Your News by the Numbers and the Political Maniacs. But let's get right to the big news story of the week, of the day, of the year, of the month, of the 2 weeks. We're talking about Brett Kavanaugh. Yes, indeed, it is true. Now, no matter when you see this video, it is very likely that this situation is going to change. But where we sit right now, Lisa Murkowski, the senator from Alaska, hasn't decided how she will vote on Brett Kavanaugh, while Susan Collins and Jeff Flake have both said that the FBI investigation seems to be thorough, they haven't said how they will vote. The three votes necessary. We also don't know where Heidi Heitkamp sits, the senator from North Dakota. We don't know where Joe Manchin sits, the senator from West Virginia. All of these will come to play in the next coming hours. And so by the time this video goes online, I'm pretty sure we will either, one, have a new Supreme Court justice, or two, we won't. But here's what you need to know. Here is what you at home need to know. Because we could sit here and we could debate if Brett Kavanaugh should be in and if Brett Kavanaugh should not be in. Let me address that part first. I've addressed it a couple of times online, on my Instagram, on Fox, but let me address it again. And I'm going to give you a balanced opinion on this. You guys know I'm very balanced. You guys know I'm very reasonable. You guys know I am not somebody that yells the building's on fire if the building ain't on fire. That's just not something that Richard Fowler does. And if you know me, and then you know that. So here's where we sit. Where we sit is this. Professor Blasey Ford came down to Congress and testified about what happened to her on a night in somewhere in the early 1980s. She alleges that Brett Kavanaugh with his buddy, Mark Judge, tried to rape her in a room. They put their face, he put his hand over his mouth. She said that she heard, and I'm paraphrasing, the indelible laughter as they victimized her. Now, there's been people out there who have made this argument that this information should have come forward a lot quicker. Why did Democrats wait till the last day to bring this information out? And to those people, I say you are correct. Democrats, even if it was an anonymous letter, Dianne Feinstein should have presented that letter to Chuck Grassley earlier in the process. Now, I understand why, though, that there was some hesitation to present documents to Chuck Grassley, the chair of the Judiciary Committee, and the Republican members of the committee. Simple. Republicans have tried to fast-track this process. They've tried to fast-track this process like a high-speed rail line when you're not done laying the tracks. That's what we have going on here. They have hid documents. They've done document dumps in the middle of the night. They haven't let the American people see all of his records. They didn't wait for the National Archives to go through all the White House records and present them to Congress. They fast-tracked this sucker. It was sloppy, it was messy, and it was disgusting. So was what Dianne Feinstein did by holding on to this information until the last minute when this information could have been part of a larger hearing. And maybe, just maybe, if this information came out earlier, Brett Kavanaugh might have withdrawn his nomination completely and we might be dealing with somebody else. But that is all water under the bridge as we approach this Senate voting on what could be the 9th Justice of the United States Supreme Court, which is slated to happen at any hour, depending upon when you watch this video. It might have already happened. But here are the implications, which is, I think, the most important part. As we saw in Brett Kavanaugh's testimony to the United States Senate the second time after Blasey Ford's testimony, we saw a man that was angry, and let's be very real, if he was wrongfully accused, if this was a false allegation, then there is room for righteous indignation. But what there is not room for is putting politics into our Supreme Court. We all know that our Supreme Court is a political body, deep down. But what makes the Supreme Court such a staple in American history, and such a staple to our institutions, such a staple to our democracy, is its perceived nonpartisanship. The fact that the judges don't wear political parties on the back of their row, on the back of their jerseys, as we see on Capitol Hill. And the fact that these justices look at cases and they don't see the world in 2 years and 4 years. These justices are called upon to see the world and to see the United States in 10 years and 20 year segments. The fact that Judge Kavanaugh was so quick and flippant at talking about how this was a referendum on Donald Trump and how this is trying to get back for what happened, what he did to Hillary Clinton, shows that he is a political tool of the Republican Party. And he is somebody that should not sit on the Supreme Court, especially on a seat that is replacing a justice, Justice Kennedy, that understood that the job of the courts were to be apolitical. Remember, America, if you don't believe me, just read some history books. This country, this experiment, this grand experiment is based now today. What weaves our fabric are about 7 Supreme Court cases that has created the fabric of this country. You know some of them you don't. Brown versus the Board of Education, Roe versus Wade, the marriage equality case, Heller versus Washington, D.C., the case about guns. These are the cases that make up the fabric of who we are as Americans. They're what keeps our union together. They're what keeps us from going to war with each other at any particular moment. They are what prevent a civil war. Which brings me to the PSA, the public service announcement for this segment. Whether or not you believe Judge Kavanaugh, whether or not you think that he is a martyr for the Me Too movement, or you thought his delivery nullified his message of innocence and he is as guilty as a little kid stealing from the offering plate on a Sunday at church, here is the PSA. Here's what you've been waiting for. Here's what you need to know at home. This decision will come down to 3 senators: Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Susan Collins of Maine, Jeff Flake of Arizona. I want to zero in on Arizona for a second. Jeff Flake is not running for re-election, and his seat is up. There is a race there against McSally, and I want to say the name is Simia, and I'm going to say it wrong, and somebody's going to correct me below. But Democrats have a chance to pick this seat up. This whole Brett Kavanaugh thing should remind you of one thing. our democracy is fragile. And I know people out there, and I'm talking to those individuals, say, oh, my vote doesn't count. Or those say, I don't vote because the system is rigged. Or the people that say, oh, I don't vote because my vote doesn't matter, nobody cares about me, this is all about lobbyists and dark money and politics and blah, 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 blah. To all of you guys, our democracy is on the verge of collapse. This great experiment could turn out to be a failure if you don't get out and vote in this upcoming midterm elections. We are 35 days out, and if it goes that Republicans put Brett Kavanaugh on the United States Supreme Court, given minus what happened with Blasey Ford, just given his sheer his invocation of politics, will make it clear that we have weaponized the court in a way that has never been weaponized in its 113 justices over the 200 years of this country. America, I'm urging you that this hearing, this past 2 weeks, should force every American who has a voter registration card, every American who has the right to vote, to get out to the polls and to vote in this upcoming election. Make your voice heard, because if you don't, you will see more and more Brett Kavanaughs, more and more people who have no loyalty to the rule of law, more and more individuals that have no loyalty to making our Supreme Court apolitical. You will see more and more individuals that think they deserve the seat, even though it is a job interview. This election has consequences. We saw it in 2016. Brett Kavanaugh is a consequence of that election. But we have an opportunity in 2018 to rewrite the rule book, to change the rules, and to get out there and vote in mass numbers. So let's do it. Hello, world. It's your boy, Richard. Every night when I get home, I find myself quite thirsty. Thirsty for an adult beverage. And that is why I prefer a tall glass of organic wine from the Organic Wine Company. Founded in 1972, the Organic Wine Company is the nation's oldest importer of organically produced wines. They have a tremendous selection, red, white, sparkling, and dessert wines, and it's oh so tasty. It's easy and inexpensive to ship right to your door. For a limited time, you can get an even bigger savings by visiting ecowines.com and using the coupon code FowlerShow. Join the movement of good-tasting, earth-friendly wine drinkers, led by the fine folks at the Organic Wine Company. You can find them online at ecowines.com or give them a call, 1-888-ecowines.com. And don't forget to use that coupon code, FowlerShow, for your extra special discount. This is our movement, and more importantly, this is our community. Do you feel like your community is being left behind? Has your elected official neglected their constituents? It's time to get your voice back. It's time for your community to rise up. We want you to take a picture of what's wrong in your community and send it to photo@fowlershow.com or tweet it to us at @fowlershow. We want to help you advocate for yourself. We want to help you get your voice back. Your pictures will be featured on our blog. We might even take your issue up on our show. We are committed to your community. Now it's time for you to be committed as well. Go ahead, send the picture to photo@fowlershow.com or tweet it to us at @fowlershow. Remember, it's time for you to get informed, empowered, and get your voice back. Our community, our movement. Only on The Richard Fowler Show.
I'm a third grade teacher.
I'm a school bus driver.
I am a parent.
I am a teacher's aide. And I agree to be identified
as a caring adult who pledges to help bullied students.
I will listen carefully to all students who seek my help
and act on their behalf
to put an immediate stop to bullying.
I will work with other caring adults to create a safe
learning environment for all the students in my school.
In my school.
In my school.
In my school.
I'm Dennis Van Roekel, president of the National Education Association. Help us create safe, bully-free learning environments for all students. One caring adult can make all the difference. Be that adult and take the pledge at nea.org/bullyfree. Adults have the power to stop bullying in our schools.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
Bully free. It starts with me.
Visit NEA.org/bullyfree. A message from the National Education Association.
My name is Joe Thompson. I'm 29 years old and I have a career that I love as a systems analyst. Career. It still sounds cool to say that word. I never could have gotten on this path without a college degree. And if the college me were here, he'd tell you.
I never would have gotten to college without big brothers, big sisters. I could have ended up anywhere, on the streets even. But college? Joe Thompson? Not likely. My big brother helped me out. He taught me I could do anything. At a time when a lot of people were saying just the opposite.
And to a 7-year-old, that means a lot. My big brother's name is Phil. And Phil is the reason that this 7-year-old grows up to be a systems analyst.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child. And that can last a lifetime. Start something today at bigbrothersbigsisters.org. Brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
The Richard Fowler Show is completely and totally interactive, so go ahead, give us a call, 202-573-8737, or tweet us at Fowler Show. Remember, this movement is nothing without you, so pick up that phone. Good night, America. It's time for your political maniacs. Tonight's maniac, no surprise, the President of the United States. President Trump's business empire and legacy as a billionaire has long come with some level of shade. Shady dealings, unscrupulous business practices, some bankruptcies, but much of that history has been shrouded from public oversight. However, in a new bombshell story by the New York Times, reporters detail a stunning level of corruption and sketchy dealings behind a massive $413 million inheritance and the president received from his father. The real estate mogul and the patriarch of the Trump name, Fred Trump, used various shadow companies and various things to evade taxes and to pay off his family. According to the report, much of the money came from Mr. Trump because he helped his parents dodge taxes and set up sham corporations, which he and his siblings used to disguise millions of dollars in gifts from their parents, the records show. Now, we also recently, on our way to the studio, we found that Orrin Hatch, the senator from Utah, and I want to read this because I want to make sure we get the reporting right on this. Orrin Hatch, the senator from Utah, has basically said that this matter should be looked into, meaning that he's believing the New York Times. And here's what he says, because I want to make sure, you know how I believe in this. I believe. And so CNN's Manu Raju spoke to Hatch this week and asked what he thought about the New York Times article into Trump's family's taxes. And here is what Orrin Hatch said. It's funny they wouldn't bring this up by the election. He said, I'd be happy to look into it, but right now, I don't know enough about it. He went further. Hatch told Raju that he wouldn't want to disclose his tax records if he was Trump, but the senator has also said that the president may have to release these tax returns eventually. So here is my question. Number one, why is there a double standard? Why is it that Donald Trump is a way to get away? Why is he allowed to get away with so much that other candidates were not allowed to get away with? Every candidate in recent American history released their tax returns so the American people can see where they're getting their money from, who they're influenced by, on and on and on. But Donald Trump has somehow evaded his ability to do this. Even Hillary Clinton, who people think is the slimiest of slimy people in the world. Okay? If you were to ask conservative media, if you were to ask them what they thought about Hillary Clinton, they would think she's slime, which is why they continue to cover her every time she opens up her mouth. And let me be very real. Hillary Clinton speaking at at an Atlantics festival, Hillary Clinton taking her dog for a walk, Hillary Clinton calling Trump supporters a deplorable part two, that's not news. It's not news. It shouldn't be news because Hillary Clinton is one, a private citizen. She's not running for re-election. And three, and most importantly, conservatives are these deplorables, in Hillary's words, air quotes, have already beaten her. But I digress. Back to this New York Times story. Now, the New York Times reports also indicate that Mr. Trump helped his father take improper tax deductions worth millions and millions and millions of dollars. He also helped formulate a strategy to undervalue his parents' real estate holdings by hundreds of millions of dollars on tax returns, sharply reducing the tax bill when those properties were transferred to him and his siblings. These maneuvers met with little resistance from the Internal Revenue Service, the Times found that the president's parents, Fred and Maria Trump, transferred over $1 billion in wealth to their children, which could have produced a tax bill of at least $555 million under the 55% tax rate that is imposed on gifts and inheritance. The Trump paid a total of $552.2 million, about 5% tax records show. Now, don't get me wrong. Our tax code is a whole heap of shit. It's a mess. It's an absolute mess. Now, President Trump, when he ran for office, promised that he would do tax reform. He didn't do tax reform. He did tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires and penalties to everybody else by getting rid of things like the SALT deduction or getting rid of things that helped, you know, families and helped students and helped small businesses. But I digress. I digress. If the president, mind you, I'm not a tax attorney, I'm not a tax lawyer. If the president took advantage of our broken tax system, then the president isn't the problem. The tax system is. But if it is true, based on this New York Times reporting, that the president engaged, him and his family engaged in high wire tax evasion, hiding money from the federal government so it wouldn't be taxed, creating up sham companies so the federal government couldn't find the money or the money can move through separate channels. If these things are all true, then how is it possible for the same individual that did that to run this country? And this is also at a time when the IRS is understaffed and stretched to the limit, and you have a White House that refuses to give the IRS the staff and support that it needs. Now, the Times notes that there is little chance Trump could be prosecuted for his role in evading taxes because the statute of limitation has expired. However, he may still be responsible for civil fines because of the reported fraud. And after the fraud came out, Mayor Bill de Blasio of New York indicated that his tax office would be investigating this to see if Mr. Trump and the Trump Organization owes the New York City more municipal taxes than one might think. America, America, America. Ooh, Lord Jesus. I swear, sometimes I feel like we're living in a reality show. And not usually in most reality shows, you have an A plot and a B plot. And they're both running at the same time. You have your major plot line and then your minor plot line. Right now, we're running like an A plot, a B plot, a C plot, a D plot, an E plot, an F plot, an H plot, all at the same time. You have Brett Kavanaugh, you have this tax story, you have the Robert Mueller investigation, you have the Paul Manafort investigation, right? You have NAFTA, you have a new NAFTA deal. You have the global world, the fact that we announced this week that we are no longer even willing to be fake friends with Iran. It's all going down. And we're literally living in a reality story. It's literally a reality show. Literally a reality show. And it cannot get any worse. And like I said in the last segment, if this alarms you, if any of the stories that we've covered so far alarm you, if any of the stories we covered so far makes you shake your head, if any of the stories that we've covered so far makes you question the American democracy, makes you question the American experiment, you have only one thing to do. in less than 30 some odd days, you have got to register, you've got to get out there, and you've got to vote. Point blank period. So Véronique, thank you all for joining us today. So tell me, what is the Organic Wine Company?
The Organic Wine Company is something I founded out of the depths of my heart some 30 years ago, if you can believe it, because of my passion for the earth, my passion for my terroir, the land of my ancestors.
Now tell me, how is organic wine made differently than regular wine?
Generally speaking, an organic wine has to be made with grapes that are grown organically. An organic tomato is a tomato that's grown without pesticides, herbicides, or any kind of chemical fertilizers and such. And so grapes grown organically are grown that way as well, without those chemicals. Conventional wines, on the other hand, may be grown with all sorts of pesticides and herbicides and other chemical adjuvants. And then once in the cellar, may be made with all sorts of other chemicals. I'm excited to be following in the footsteps of Tom Hartmann and doing something before it's too late, giving people a wonderful wine to celebrate with, to celebrate their life and their friends and our planet in a way that is completely sort of congruent. Then I have wines that represent that code of honor in a bottle. You can call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. And look for us at www.theorganicwinecompany.com. Better even, you should call me, Véronique, and talk to me and get to know those wines personally. And we carry about 100 by now, a whole range of from Merlot to Cabernets to Chardonnays to all sorts of things from different countries and also from California.
Breast health awareness is critical for all women, particularly African Americans, because we have an increased risk of dying from breast cancer compared to women of other backgrounds. At U of M, I'm doing research here and with women in Ghana to look for an inherited link that makes African and African American women susceptible to a more aggressive type of cancer. Finding this link, I believe, will make new treatments possible. But right now, making sure that you are properly screened is our best protection.
With experts like Dr. Lisa Newman, the University of Michigan Health System is a leader in cancer care. When you call our free Cancer Answer line at 800-865-1125, an oncology nurse will answer any questions you might have about the prevention, screening, and treatment of breast cancer and other forms of cancer. All calls are confidential. Call 800-865-1125 or visit uofmhealth.org/cancer-answer-line.
We're working to help everyone enjoy longer, healthier lives.
That's the Michigan difference.
Say you want to go to college.
Yay!
A Big Ten college.
Yeah!
But you don't want to feel like part of the, well, you know. Is there an answer for you? Of course. Indiana University East.
Go Rebels!
Indiana University East. You'll get the quality of a Big Ten education in a small college setting. IU East offers more than 50 fields of study, from accounting to political science, taught by internationally recognized faculty with an average of 18 students per class. So it's not student number 95A-6273, please report to... It's more like, hey, John, welcome to class. Best of all, you'll graduate with one of the most respected degrees anywhere, a degree from IU. Don't wait. Go to iue.edu... or call 800-959-EAST to arrange a visit to Indiana University East. IU. Focused on you.
The Richard Fowler Show is completely and totally interactive, so go ahead, give us a call, 202-573-8737, or tweet us at Fowler Show. Remember, this movement is nothing without you, so pick up that phone.
And we're back on the Fowler Show. It's time for your Washington Whisperer. The White House has altered the official transcript of a tense back and forth on Monday between President Trump and a female reporter, despite the existence of video footage in which the accurate exchange can be clearly heard. After President Trump called Cecilia Vargas of ABC, he poked fun at her and claims that she was in a state of shock because he called on her. Vargas stated that she was not shocked that the president fired, and the president fired back, "That's okay. I know you're not thinking. You never do." In the White House official transcript, however, the comment is recorded as, "I know you're not thinking." Yes, America. "I know you're not thinking." I watched this press conference live. I saw this exchange. And for the fact that the White House would go back and edit the transcript to make the president look better. Remember, the transcript, this is official government record. Official government record. I don't care whether you voted for Trump or not. Tampering with official government records to make somebody look better is not only not okay, but it's wrong. Don't take my word for it, though. According to the transcript, the president says, "I know you're not thanking." Let's take a listen to the actual exchange.
Go ahead. Sure. She's shocked that I picked her. She's like in a state of shock.
I'm not thinking, Mr.
That's
president.
Okay. I know you're not thinking. You never do.
I'm sorry?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Listen. You don't have to be a rocket scientist. You could be deaf and blind. You could be hard of hearing and blind and not be able to speak, and you would have heard what happened in that exchange. There's no way in hell he said thanking. He clearly said, "That's okay. I know you're not thinking. You never do." Just put it into context. "I know you're not thinking. You never do." If that's okay. "I know you're not thinking. You never do." Does that even sound? I mean, I'm not saying this president is, he's no New York Times copy editor, right, when it comes to grammar. But that doesn't even make sense contextually. Not even remotely. It is just a bold-faced, blatant lie by this White House. Now, I get it. People out there are going to say, "Oh, the president's rambunctious. The president, you know, he doesn't always have the most class to him, but he's getting things done for the American people." But do you really trust the guy when he says all these things are happening, when he and his team are willing to lie and change one word on a transcript to make him look better? Is that the trustworthiness that we demand from our leaders? I think not. Following the exchange, Vargas went on to ask her question, which was about the White House's reportedly limiting the scope of an ongoing FBI investigation to the sexual assault allegations leveled against Judge Brett Kavanaugh, Trump's second nominee to the United States Supreme Court. He sidestepped the question, admonishing Vargas in the process for not sticking to the topic of the press conference, which was trade. And Vargas responded by saying, she wrote about the events on Twitter, and here's what she said. "A news conference means that you get to ask whatever question you want. Hashtag First Amendment." And Celia Vargas, you are correct. And you know what a press conference also means? It also means you can't be denigrated and disrespected by the President of the United States, because you are a bold, smart journalist, and you are a thinker. To do your job, you have to be a thinker. And the fact the president would say you weren't thinking is mean, it's rude, it's disrespectful, and it's downright bullying. And our response to the president's bullying, maybe we should take a book out of his wife's page, the first lady, and say, "Mr. President, it's time for you to be best and end the bullying." Especially against a reporter at ABC News who wants to do nothing more than to do her job. And her job is to question government. Her job is to hold government accountable. Her job is to ask you hard questions. It is your job, Mr. President, to answer those questions. It is your job to answer those questions for the American people. The reason why the press, the Brady Room, is less than 500 steps from the Oval Office is because it is the American people's check on power. It is citizen, everyday citizen journalists and journalists that go to work and ask the hard questions for the American people. That is why our founders put the freedom of the press as not the Second Amendment, not the Eighth Amendment, not the 15th Amendment, but the freedom of the press was codified as the First Amendment, because our founding fathers got what the job of journalism is: to hold power accountable, to speak truth to power, to make sure that power is transparent. There's no politician in the world that likes 100% of their coverage by the media. Hell, there's no pundit in the world that we like 100% of our coverage when it comes to what happens in the media. You know how many times there are segments that I do, and my producers can tell you, where the segment ends up being a draw, and you would see, you know, a media outlet or a media analyst outlet write, Fowler gets slammed by so-and-so. Liberal gets hosed on this issue. I don't like that reporting. But I understand that the people who write that, they're entitled to their free speech. I don't say they're not thinkers. I don't call them stupid. I don't call them the enemy of the people. I don't call them my enemy. Their job is to tell a story. And their perspective on the story is different than mine. But they have the freedom and the ability to do it. Why? Because this is America. This is America. Plain and simple. This is America. And if that freedom of the press never existed, our country would not be as great as it currently is. Let's remember, if it wasn't for the freedom of the press, nobody would have ever heard what happened. That terrifying day when civil rights workers decided to cross the Edmund Pettus Bridge on the walk from Selma to Montgomery for the right to vote. If it weren't for the media, the world would have never known that Rosa Parks decided to sit in the front of the bus instead of stand in the back. If it wasn't for the media, the world would have never heard about the Stonewall riots. And what the implication of those riots meant for LGBTQ folks all across this country. If it wasn't for the power of the media, we would not be having a conversation about whether a Black Lives Matter and holding our police officers more accountable for their actions. If it wasn't for the media, we would have never known that Richard Nixon broke into the DNC office and tried to steal information and tried to win his campaign fraudulently. America, it is the job of our journalists every day to tell the hard stories. Some of them go in harm's way to do it. Some of them go to far stretches of the world to tell the story of people yearning for freedom, people yearning for democracy, people fighting against genocide, people fighting against oppression. That's what these men and women do every day. And not one of them should be told that they're not thinking. Because they do think. They were born to think. They were born to be storytellers. And the fact that we have a president that is willing to bully these individuals, to talk badly about them, to call them an enemy of the people, and then to attack a female member of the White House press corps and say, that's okay, I know you're not thinking, you never do, in the current era that we live in, should cause a pause amongst every single American. Remember, even if you are a man and you benefit from male privilege, remember that you came from a mother. You likely have a sister, you likely have some nieces, you likely have some aunts, and at best you have a good girlfriend. And if you're lucky, you might have a wife, and you might even have some daughters. These women, just like Cecilia Vargas, deserve respect, they deserve dignity, and they deserve the same treatment given to a man. The president would have never made these comments to a male reporter in the press briefing room. So he should have never made those comments to a female reporter in that same briefing room. Seems to be pretty simple to me. Be right back after this break.
Now, all I know is what I read on the internet. Today's headline, pot legal in 14 states for pain. Now, that takes a smoke break to a whole new level. Now, some companies might see this as a problem, and some, well, they might consider it as an incentive program, depending on the state. As far as I can see, and I'm concerned, it might become a state of confusion. Now, I see a few businesses that might have a problem with this new style of pain management. Restaurants, for one. The munchies, you know. They might be eaten out of house and home. Definitely eaten to their bottom line. Corporations, well, they might have a problem in meetings with uncontrollable laughing fits. Of course, the entertainment business will be fine. But for them, it will be business as usual. I don't know about you folks, but I can think of a few jobs I would not want folks smoking marijuana for pain. My doctor, for one. Unless his name is Dr. Feelgood, and I'd like to know that ahead of time. The police. I don't want anyone getting that shoot first, ask questions thing later in their mind. Whatever happened to aspirin? Now, we might just allow some people to smoke out, like Michael Steele. Matter of fact, we might just fund the whole party. No pun intended. For them, it might calm them down a little. After all, what's the worst thing that could happen? They smoke, eat, laugh, and go to sleep. Now that sounds like the Congress if you ask me. Then again, who knows, you might be working with someone right now that's high. I mean, sometimes folks have accused me of being on something. Rest assured, folks, I'm just on a roll. All right, go to my website, willrogersusa.com.
Stop taking your politics so seriously. Listen to humorist Will Roberts Saturday night, 6 to 7 p.m. on WEAC Radio 1480 AM.
Hello, world. It's your boy, Richard Fowler. Every Friday after I've wrapped up the Richard Fowler Show, I find myself quite thirsty. Thirsty for an adult beverage. Not just any old adult beverage. I prefer a tall glass of one of my favorite fine wines. But not just any old wine either. I obviously demand wine that is super tasty. But I also require the wine I drink be good for the earth and kind to my body. That is why I only buy my wine from The Organic Wine Company. Founded in 1980, The Organic Wine Company is the nation's oldest importer of organic wines. They have a tremendous selection, reds, whites, sparkling, dessert wines, and it's easy and inexpensive to ship them all directly to your front door. Join the movement. The movement of health-conscious, earth-friendly wine drinkers, led by the fine folks at The Organic Wine Company. You can find them online at ecowine.com or give them a call at 1-888-ECO-WINE and tell them your boy Richard Fowler sent you.
I'm Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico. Last year, my state became the 12th state to allow medical use of marijuana by patients who are seriously ill. Some people were surprised that a Republican governor supports medical marijuana, but I'm hardly alone. Groups like the American College of Physicians, American Nurses Association, and American Public Health Association have all acknowledged the medical value of marijuana. New research about medical marijuana is coming out almost every day, showing remarkable potential in all sorts of serious conditions, including cancer, AIDS, and chronic pain. But some in government still want to put politics and ideology ahead of public health. To learn more about medical marijuana and what you can do to help, contact the Marijuana Policy Project at 1-877-JOIN-MPP or visit them on the web at mpp.org. Thanks.
And we're back on the Fowler Show, and we have another story for you. It's time for one of my favorite segments. Can we all just get along? Congress sent an $854 billion bill to the president Wednesday that would fund the government while not providing any money for President Trump's border wall. The House passed the bill 361-61 with 176 Republicans and 185 Democrats voting yes, and 56 House Republicans and 5 Democrats voting no. The spending package reflects a compromise Republican leaders sought with the White House that postponed the fight over Trump's demand for a border wall until after the November 6th midterm elections. So here we have it. More government spending. While the bill provides $674 billion for defense, $12.1 billion for government labor programs and $90 billion for health programs until October of next year. The bill would fund other government programs until December 7th, meaning lawmakers would have to return after the midterm elections to work out a number of contentious issues. And what makes this more complex is that in all likelihood, what every indicator shows us is that the Democrats will be the majority in the United States House of Representatives. What does that mean for these negotiations? Only the good Lord in heaven knows. Why? Because we live in an unpredictable era with an unpredictable leader. Just think about, like, I had to say this to, I was talking to my team, the production team at the Fowler Show, about how fast the president has sped up this news cycle. Just think about it. This past year, if you take the calendar year alone, during this past calendar year, we had the Las Vegas shooting, we had the Parkland shooting, we had an Omarosa's book release, we had Paul Manafort being indicted and being found guilty, we had Michael Cohen flipping on the president, we had a Brett Kavanaugh nomination that is still up in the air. And it's only October. It's only October, folks. We have had one of the fastest news cycles in American history. And I think this is actually part of the president's plan. If we can keep them busy, if we could keep throwing things at them, if we could keep changing things up. We also had a nuclear, we had a North Korea meeting. Don't forget about the North Korea meeting. Don't forget about the fact that we pull out of the Iran deal, pull out of the Paris Accords. That all happened as well. Right? All of these things are happening so fast, so quickly. And the American people aren't really getting a chance to digest it. We're running up a budget deficit like it is going out of style. Republicans are spending like their hair is on fire at a Saks shoe sale where the Manolo Blahniks are half off. That's how they're spending. They claim to be the party of fiscal restraint and fiscal responsibility. Sadly, all we're seeing though is a party of fiscal mismanagement. America, that is why this midterm election is so critical. I know they're going to say, Richard, you said this all show. And you're damn right I did. Just like my shirt says, black is beautiful. And so is voting. And I need you to vote. Not because, don't vote just because I'm telling you to vote. Vote because you're a citizen of this country. Vote because you drive on the roads. Vote because you send your kids to public schools. Hell, vote because you want to have a child in the future and you want them to live in the land of the free and the home of the brave, where every American has access to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because all of that is at stake in this election. The reason why women right now are pouring out their hearts and poor and crying out their eyes on Capitol Hill sharing their Me Too story is because they understand what's at stake. Beyond the fact that there is credible allegations against Brett Kavanaugh, they also understand that Brett Kavanaugh and Republicans have one goal. And their goal is very simple, to overturn Roe v. Wade. And overturning Roe v. Wade has far more implications than just abortion. What Roe v. Wade codified into law, into case law, is this one important nugget that makes the experiment in this our modern democracy work. What Roe v. Wade put in its decision, when the judges wrote it, they codified that for once in American history that men and women are equal. Why would you say that? Because a man, me, I have 100% control of my body. Every single bone, every single morsel, from the crown of my head to the sole of my feet, Richard Fowler is in control. Roe v. Wade made it so that every woman has that same level of control, that same level of liberty over her body, all of it, from the crown of her head to the sole of her feet. With Republicans set to flip the balance of this court, what they will do, pretty simply, is by overturn Roe v. Wade, you will say, ladies, you are in control of 90% of your body. The 10% of your body where you reproduce, We control that. It's actually them like tattooing an American flag on it. People always ask me, Richard, why are you pro-choice? And I say very simply, I have a simple answer to a complex question. I am pro-choice because I don't have a uterus, and thus it is not my job to determine what you do with yours. I can go even further and say, I don't have a uterus, and I don't have intimate partner relationships with folks who have uteruses. So I definitely don't have a say. Because me and whoever I'm with, none of us have a uterus. So we have to be pro-choice for that simple reason, because we shouldn't be in the conversation between you and your doctor. This is what the Republicans want to do here. So beyond the fact that they're running up the budget deficit, beyond the fact that on December 7th, there will be a showdown on Capitol Hill for how we will spend money that helps seniors, that helps the poor, that helps the sick, that helps the children, that help the disabled, that help those with special needs. The fact that we're going to debate that in December is reason enough for you to vote. But if that's not reason enough for you vote because you believe that your sister and your mother and your niece and your cousin is equal to you as a man. If that's not a reason for you to vote, if you're a woman watching tonight, you vote because you know not only that you are equal to a man, but you could do the same work that a man does, and half the time you're smarter than us. You go vote. If you believe that our federal government should have some restraint on how they spend our tax dollars, then hell, America, you go vote. If you have a problem with the fact that the president's willing to go into government record, a transcript of a press conference, and change one word so he doesn't look like a bully when his wife is running a campaign called Be Best, which is supposed to end bullying, you need to go vote. If you believe that our public schools should teach every student about healthy sexual relationships, if you believe that students should get more than just abstinence education when we all know they're having sex, then you need to go vote. If you believe in this grand experiment that we call the United States of America, if you've benefited from it, if you have started out as lower class or working class and now you're middle class, you need to go vote so that the people behind you have the ability to be in the middle class as well. This election has elections have consequences. We learned that in 2016, and we would be fools if we learned a lesson in 2016 and we chose not to apply it in 2018. Maya Angelou, the late Nobel laureate poet, said it best. If you know better, you do better. And America, we've had 2 years to learn better. And so now, in November, we have got to do better. Listen, that clock that all tells me it's time to go. Remember, I love you, but God loves you way more than I do. Good night from Washington, everybody.